Number one, COVID-19. It goes without saying that the continuing COVID-19 pandemic was the story of the year for not only Westlock, but the world. The year that began with hope following the unveiling of a series of COVID-19 vaccines, ended with the rise of the Omicron variant and skyrocketing case counts that have yet to subside. Ongoing measures, which included mandated vaccinations for some federal and provincial government departments to fight the spread, continue to impact how all Canadians work and live. And while the province eased restrictions under its Open for Summer plan in early July, rising case counts and hospitalizations soon after ended any hope for a return to pre-COVID life. Locally, that's meant people continue to wear masks when entering any business and must show proof of vaccination as part of the province's restrictions exemption program when sitting down for a meal or entering recreation facilities like the Rotary Spirit Center. Remember, the RSC and pool didn't even open until March due to then COVID restrictions and were closed sporadically after. Although COVID fatigue continues to grow, local vaccination rates, which had lagged behind the rest of the province for much of the year, have slowly improved. The year-end stats for Westlock, which includes West Thorholt County and South Lesser Slave River, state that 81.9% of people over the age of 18 have received two shots. The number drops to 77.8% when you account for kids ages 12 to 18, then to 72.1% counting children ages 5 to 18. And while there's been a muted return to normal, 2021 was the second straight year the Ag Fair had to be cancelled due to uncertainty around the pandemic, while the town's Canada Day and Light Up celebrations were significantly scaled back versus past years. Schools did return to in-person learning in the fall, but with the rise of Omicron, the province has delayed their reopening following the Christmas break until January 10. Number 2, the Westlock Community Foundation. Albert and Florence Miller bequeathed much of their estate to the town of Westlock. Their land fetched just over $8 million via auction in December. The money will be used to form the Westlock Community Foundation, which will in turn disperse those funds back to the community over the decades to come. While the Westlock Community Foundation may be number 2 on the list, a compelling argument can be made that the foundation will be the most important story for the next 50 years. Unveiled at the end of September, the foundation is possible due to the proceeds of the estate of Albert and Florence Miller. Their land went to auction in early December and fetched just over $8 million. Ultimately, the contribution from Albert and Florence, who passed away in 2020 and 2019 respectively, will be the foundation's nest egg, and the return on the investment from it is what will be used to fund community initiatives. Mayor Ralph Larriger fought back tears when talking about the bequeathment in the fall, calling it a game changer for the community. I knew for some time that Albert was going to be generous to his community, he was just that kind of guy. But I didn't realize how generous he was going to be. I get emotional about it, I can't help it, said Larriger September 23. It's game changer money. Municipal governments don't get bequeathments like this, it doesn't happen. We're profoundly honored by this generous gift. Larriger said that although the idea of simply using the windfall for one, or a handful of large projects, was tempting as it could solve a lot of problems, Miller was clear in his will that the money would be used for community building, and couldn't be used to reduce taxes or lumped into general revenue. We realized as a council that the eyes of the community would be on us and we had to do it right. And I'm absolutely honored by what I think is a real vote of confidence from Albert in our council to do the right thing, said Larriger. The foundation task force is chaired by Wayne Payer and has Brian Trueblood, Debbie McCoy, Jim Lawrence, Laura Morey, Sarah Hayward, Clem Fanyan, Randy Wold, Larriger and Townsow Simone Wiley as members. Larriger said that he expects the foundation will begin handing out donations at some point in 2023. The opportunities that can come out of this foundation for this region is immense, added Payer. To me, if we do our job right, we can be a place for other people to donate similar to what Albert and Florence did. Number 3, political upheaval. Joe Renault casts his ballot during the October 7 advance poll at the Heritage Building. The October municipal election brought massive change to the bodies which govern the town of Westlock, Westlock County and Village of Clyde, as well as the Pembina Hills and Evergreen Catholic School divisions. Of the 19 seats on the town, county and village councils, 13 were claimed by newcomers, The village turned over its entire 5-member council and has even had a by-election since to replace one councillor who resigned due to health concerns. On the school side, all the incumbent Pembina Hills trustees did not run again. The county includes 5 new councillors, although Division 3 Representative Ray Marquette previously served from January 2016 until October 2017. The municipality also has a new reeve, as recently elected Division 7 councillor Christine Weiss unseated Division 2 councillor Jared Stitson, who was the only county councillor to be acclaimed in the election. The only other county incumbent to keep his seat was Isaac Scubin in Division 5. Over at the town, Mayor Ralph Larriger was unopposed for a second straight election and will serve a third straight term. If he serves until 2025, Larriger will extend the run of 3-term mayors in Westlock to 30 years, joining Bruce Lennon, 2004-2013, and Shirley Morey, 1995-2004, until 2013. Municipal council terms were only 3 years in length. At the council table, Clem Fanyan, David Truckee and John Shoemaker, with a combined 45-plus years of municipal political experience, all retired in advance of the election. Incumbent councillors Curtis Snell, Mortaza Jamali and Randy Wold were the top 3 vote-getters and have been joined at the council table by Laura Morey, John Kramer and Abby Keyes. Although now out of town politics, Truckee and Fanyan continue to serve as school board trustees. Truckee won the Pembina Hills town seat in a 4-person race, while Fanyan defeated longtime trustee Karen Muller for the Evergreen seat. The other Pembina Hills seats in the Westlock ward are also filled by new reps, with Maureen Schneier winning Ward 3, Busby, while Sherry Allen was acclaimed in Ward 2, Dapp, Jarvie, Fawcett. Allen previously served 1 term as a trustee from 2010 to 2013. Number 4 Big Digs. This photo, courtesy of the town of Westlock, shows the plastic liner that has been installed to contain any further seepage from the site of the old Imperial Oil bulk fuel station onto 108th Street. The town of Westlock embarked on a number of high-profile infrastructure projects in 2021, highlighted by the $6.3 million 108th Street rehabilitation project, which will carry over into 2022, and the $3.56 million West Industrial Storm Water Project that's roughly 95% complete. And as ambitious the past year was, the town has $8,111,961 worth of work planned for 2022, including the construction of a new $4.44 million public workshop and cold storage facility, the demolition of Jubilee Arena, tapped at $1 million, and $200,000 towards the revitalization of the Polymath Playground. This year's budget includes $1,648,461 worth of carry-forward projects. The 108th Street project had its share of challenges, ranging from supply chain problems to the discovery of hydrocarbon containment from an old adjacent Imperial Oil fuel site, plus issues surrounding as-built drawings that didn't correspond with what was actually underground. To deal with the heavy concentrations of hydrocarbons, tons of contaminated soil had to be trucked away, while a plastic liner was installed underground to contain any possible further seepage. An initial estimate for the cleanup work, which Imperial is being billed for, was pegged at $1.6 million. Work on that side project started at the end of May and wrapped before July 1. Although the entire project isn't finished, the road was put back into a usable state for motorists until crews can get back on site in the spring. And although it didn't generate the same buzz as 108th due to construction happening on the largely unpopulated northwest side of town, the storm water project will protect residents and business from another 100-year flood like the one in August 2016 that caused millions of dollars in damages across the community. The job included construction of a naturalized stormwater management pond that improves runoff quality by providing a site for suspended solid settlement and removing contaminants from the watercourse. Additionally, the pond provides a buffer to downstream residents by easing the flows moving through the outlet of the Wabash Creek. These projects are going to touch people in their daily lives, especially in regard to the storm pond and the improvements to get stormwater out of town, noted then-Cown. David Truckee at Council's February 8 meeting. People are not going to be worrying nearly as much after 20 minutes of rain. I think that's long been a goal of this council and that's a huge impact to our citizens. To me, that's a highlight in this budget. It's a strategy that I'm glad to see come to fruition. Number 5 Freedom Fighter? The scene at the second sparsely attended Enough is Enough anti-COVID-19 measures rally in the parking lot of the Westlock Curling Club February 25. Pre-COVID-19, Benita Peterson was a well-known Westlock area DJ and community organizer involved in events like Light Up and The Fly in Breakfast. But on February 11, Peterson hosted the first in a series anti-COVID-19 rallies in Westlock that has not only sparked continued debate but led to her facing more than $10,000 in fines. In the months that followed the initial rally, Peterson went on to host similar events in Barrhead, Athabasca, Bonneville and Lac La Biche and in the process received a slew of Public Health Act tickets. Peterson, who's not represented by a lawyer and has yet to enter a plea, faces 10 PHA 73.1 tickets for contravening an order of the medical officer of health, specifically in relation to mass gatherings. Each ticket carries a specified fine of $1,000, plus a 20% victim fine surcharge. Peterson's case has continued to wind its way through the legal system as in Westlock Provincial Court December 1, Judge Von Myers set the case over to January 5 as Specialized Prosecutions Office Prosecutor Lindsay Tate told him a pre-trial conference that included her office, Peterson and Judge Charles Donald Gardner had been set for December 9. The December 1 appearance was the sixth adjournment of the combined case against her and 9th since her first ticket appeared on the court docket. Peterson's actions have been polarizing. Some praise her defiance and dissent, while others question her motives and tactics after she was seen on TV and social media heckling healthcare workers during a September rally at an Edmonton area hospital. Throughout, she has remained steadfast, stating on an April 8 webcast dubbed the Thursday Fastball with the Krusty Canuck that she was unafraid of the authorities and said then, "If you want to put me in jail, go ahead. I'd rather not go to jail, but I'm in a sense prepared to if that's what this is going to come to." Meanwhile, at her October court appearance, Peterson said her motivation for the past rallies was love, while previously posting on social media that she has zero intention of paying any of these fines, and contends that she hasn't broken any laws. See stories 6-10 online tomorrow, January 6.